This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Please listen to verse 255 of chapter Baqarah recited by Mr. Ali Asghar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahu la ilaha illa
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Allah is He, besides whom there is no God, the ever-living, the self-subsisting, by whom all subsist. Slumber does not overtake Him, nor sleep. Whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth is His. Who is He that can intercede with Him but by His permission? He knows what is before them and what is behind them, and they cannot comprehend anything out of His knowledge except what He pleases. His knowledge extends over the heavens and the earth, and the preservation of them both tires Him not. and He is the Most High, the Great.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warns Israel against any new aggression against Palestinians following a ceasefire between the group and the regime. Palestinians pour into the streets of the besieged Gaza Strip, celebrating what they call the victory of the resistance over the Israeli occupation. Also ahead, Argentina will go into total lockdown for 9 days as it grapples with the worst phase of the COVID-19 pandemic. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned Israel against any further acts of aggression following a ceasefire that took effect early Friday, May the 21st.
It is true that the battle ends today, but Netanyahu and the whole world should know that our hands are on the trigger and we will continue to ramp up the capabilities of this resistance. And we are telling Netanyahu and his army, if you come back, we will come back too.
The Hamas official said the Israeli regime must end its acts of violence in occupied Jerusalem and Quds and address the damage from its bombardment of the Gaza Strip. He said Tel Aviv must also end the eviction of Palestinians from their homes in East Jerusalem and Quds, which he described as a red line. Al-Rashir added that the Al-Aqsa Mosque must also be protected. His comments came after a truce went into force early Friday following 11 days of relentless Israeli airstrikes and artillery attacks on the besieged Palestinian territory. Jubilant Palestinians have taken to the streets of the Gaza Strip to celebrate a truce between the resistance movement Hamas and Israel.
This is a joyful moment for all Gaza. This is the victory for Ramadan, the Eid, and Jerusalem. We will return all the occupied lands, all the cities. If they call us, we will be the first to be with them.
We were watching the media outlets. The victory of the resistance is the victory for all the Muslims. The Palestinian resistance returned the dignity for all Muslims.
The ceasefire ended the 11 days of relentless aerial strikes and shelling by the Israeli regime and retaliatory attacks by Palestinian resistance groups. The conflict between the two sides has been the most intense in 7 years. The truce was brokered and is being monitored by Egypt. Israel's attacks on Gaza killed 232 Palestinians, including 65 children. More than 1,900 people were also injured in the Israeli onslaught. Moreover, 12 Israelis were killed and hundreds injured in Hamas's retaliatory strikes on Israeli cities. The Palestinian Foreign Minister slams Israel's aggression and crimes against Palestinians, adding that the regime can no longer enjoy impunity.
Israel is an occupying power, and Israel is not above the law. Israel cannot enjoy impunity. Israel has to be accountable for the crimes that it commits against the Palestinian people on daily basis. Crimes that tantamount to crimes against humanity and war crimes.
Riyad al-Maliki said the Israeli regime tries to introduce new facts on the ground to turn occupied Jerusalem al-Quds into a Jewish city without any Muslim character. He added that the Israeli policy of settlements expansion and forceful evictions of Palestinians in the city must be stopped. The Palestinian foreign minister stressed that any ceasefire with the regime that does not address these issues does not go far enough. Political commentator Ali Al-Faraj says the Israeli war on Gaza showed that Palestinians have now achieved some degree of deterrence.
In the past, there was no deterrent to the Israelis' attacks on Gaza and on the Palestinian lands. Basically, they were doing all sorts of corruption, demolishing houses, moving people from their homes, killing outside law, taking lands and houses, etc., making a new colonization of more lands of the Palestinians. Now there is at least some degree of deterrence, because now the Palestinians are able to defend themselves to a degree. I'm not saying they have the same power as the Zionist regime, but they have some force, and they have the backing of the resistant countries and the resistant power in the region. And this has made a significant change to their position. And therefore, this is what is affecting the Zionist regime. I mean, in the past, the Zionist regime were attacking Gaza without any expectations. But now they can see there are major consequences to such attacks.
So we're seeing jubilant scenes overnight in the besieged of the Gaza Strip following that ceasefire between the Israeli regime and the Palestinian resistance. So let's bring in Ashraf Shannon, who is in the besieged of the Gaza Strip. Ashraf, so many are describing this as perhaps a change in the balance of power, where in 2014 Israel was bombarding the Gaza Strip for 7 weeks. This time it was about 1 week. And many have related that to, or dedicated that short period of bombardment to the Palestinian retaliation on and the extent of the Palestinian retaliation against Israel.
Yes, Bassam, you're absolutely right. And whoever talks about these things is definitely correct, because there is a change in the balance of power. For example, in 2008, the Palestinian rockets made by Palestinian resistance groups like Hamas, Islamic Jihad, they would reach a mile or two. In 2012, they would go 20 miles. 2014, 50 miles. Now, they go over 100 miles. That's an example of what's going on regarding the advancement of the homemade technology that the Qassam brigades, for example, have, including unmanned drones, unmanned submarines, and many other things that we still don't know about, that the resistance groups have used against the Israeli military military personnel, against Israeli navy boats, and also the drones, explosive-laden drones, and also other drones that have been taking footage, for example, of the Israeli Ministry of War inside Tel Aviv itself. Not even now, even a year or 2 years ago, Hamas was able to take footage from the top of the Israeli War Ministry in Tel Aviv. Yes, what happened this year is something never seen before in the history of Palestinian people. It shows that the Palestinians, for the first time, were in the offense instead of being in the defense. Let's remember that on that day, on May 10th, when Mohammed Deif, the commander-in-chief of Hamas's military wing, issued that warning to Tel Aviv, saying, if you, the Israelis, do not stop your aggression against Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds, and also stop the aggression on the worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque, then the resistance faction Hamas will fire rockets, will attack the Israeli regime. And the Israelis did not listen. And then three rockets were fired towards Jerusalem al-Quds from Gaza. Because for Palestinians, for resistance groups, for Hamas, what they wanted is to tell the Israelis the issue here is Jerusalem al-Quds. And the issue here is the balance of power. They want to tell the Israelis, they want the Israelis to understand, not only the Israeli military, Hamas is also played a good trick as well on the Israeli public themselves. We've seen, I've been reading within Israeli media and watching Israeli news bulletins and programs, people are freaking out inside the Israeli regime. They don't trust the leaders anymore.
Indeed. So, Ashraf, the Palestinian resistance, we can say, played a major role in ending this battle. At the same time, we did see Israeli warplanes, carpet bombing the Gaza Strip, as it has done before. Just tell us, if you can, in 1 or 2 minutes, a bit more about the effect, despite the resilience shown by the Palestinians, the effect of on the mental health of the younger, the children, the kids.
Yes, Bissau, the children, the people, everyone here have a great sense of pride. Their morale is extremely high. Day after day, people's morale was being boosted. Every time they see a rocket fired from Gaza towards the Israeli regime, especially I'm talking here about the Qassam rocket, it was an amazing thing. You would hear people whistling from windows in the street, screaming, "Here you go, here's the Qassam rocket flying towards Tel Aviv." It was an amazing thing to see for the first time, amazing thing to witness, that the Israeli terrorism, the horror that they tried to inflict, and they did inflict a lot of damage, physical damage to the buildings, and also trying to scar the people of Gaza, both mentally and physically. But I know for sure, I've been living here for forever now, the Palestinians here are very, they have this tough mentality. It's sometimes you wonder, how come a mother who lost her child would be sort of celebrating after losing that child? You talk to her, she's like, okay, I feel bad, and I'm really frustrated about losing my child, but it's nothing. It's a cheap price to pay for honor, for Jerusalem al-Quds, for the liberation of Palestine.
Okay, Ashraf, strong remarks there. Thank you very much indeed. Ashraf Shannon there, our correspondent, joining us from the besieged Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, during a United Nations General Assembly meeting on the situation in West Asia, Iran's ambassador to the United Nations, Majid Zahrabanji, has slammed the West's approach towards the Israeli aggression against Palestinians as reprehensible and unacceptable.
And yet, the Security Council, despite the continued mass dispossession, occupation and persecution of the Palestinian people by the Israeli regime, remains obstructed by the United States from upholding its charter duties and shouldering its responsibility to stop violation of United Nations resolutions. In this regard, the General Assembly, as a collective conscience of the international community, has a vital responsibility to condemn Israel's military aggression and its ethnic cleansing, and adopt necessary measures to hold Israel accountable for its war crimes and crimes against humanity. The immoral approach of some Western governments in equating victims with culprits is reprehensible, unjust, and unacceptable. Denial of the total asymmetry in the situation of an occupier and oppressor against an occupied and oppressed people not only exposes hypocrisy and an extreme lack of moral compass, but amounts to complicity in the crimes perpetrated against Palestinians.
Israeli airstrikes have killed a Palestinian journalist in his home in the besieged the Gaza Strip. This is not the first time that reporters are hit by Israeli regime in its latest onslaught on the impoverished enclave. Dhruva Shapit reports from Gaza.
Palestinian journalist Yusuf Abu Hussein has been killed in an Israeli air raid that struck his house in the besieged Gaza Strip. Hussein, a broadcaster for Al-Aqsa radio station, was among the four Palestinians killed in the early hours of Wednesday as Israel continued its bombardment on the besieged enclave.
We are ready to sacrifice everything for Palestine. My son is a journalist. He didn't hold any weapons. He was just doing his job. He only reported the truth of what is happening here. Israel wants to silence everyone that reveals the truth.
Israeli regime has targeted journalists and residential towers housing media offices in Gaza. The building housing Press TV office and other media outlets was threatened to be bombed. Dua is a journalist that had to leave her office at dawn to save her life against an Israeli raid targeting the building next to her office.
We are sad for what is happening here for the Palestinian journalists. However, this will not undermine our will to do our job. We will keep delivering the truth to the world. Our duty is to express the truth and expose the Israeli crimes and violations. We will keep doing our job despite all the risks and dangers.
Journalists say Israel targets journalists in an attempt to block the truth and disrupt coverage of the human suffering in Gaza, in violation of the international law regarding the freedom of expression.
As journalists, we thought that we were secure against the Israeli attacks. We thought that the press sign would protect us. I still can't believe that our office has been hit by Israeli bomb. It's totally unacceptable.
Observers here say that the killing of journalists and destroying media offices in Gaza aim to silence the voices of truth from being delivered to the world. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
Turning to Argentina now, where the country's president Alberto Fernandez has announced a complete lockdown to stem the worst phase of the COVID-19 pandemic the South American nation is currently struggling with.
I am very aware, fully aware, that these restrictions create difficulties. Faced with this reality, there is no choice but to choose the preservation of life. I am not going to accept this amount of contagions or deaths as something natural.
The strict measures dubbed circuit breaker will come into force on Saturday and will remain in place until May the 31st. Under the plan, schools and unnecessary enterprises will be shut down, while there will be a complete curb on social, religious and sporting events. The decision has been taken as new coronavirus cases and related deaths have hit a record in Argentina over the last week. Some 3.4 million Argentinians have been infected and more than 72,600 succumbed to the disease so far. And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
limelight.
According to Ken Simonson, the chief economist for the Associated General Contractors of America, home builders point to surging lumber prices that they say threaten the critical housing market and the broader economy. Prices for materials used in the construction industry jumped 19.7% from April of 2020 to last month. This represents the largest increase in the past 35 years. We now present you an article written jointly by Jarrett Renshaw and Howard Schneider under the heading Job Fears, Price Spikes Mean Heartburn for Biden White House as Economy Revs Up. There are bad memory for Americans old enough to remember the 1970s, but they're also likely causing a few sleepless nights in the White House, as the United States' economic recovery from the unprecedented coronavirus recession hits some bumps. The jolts are dampening consumer confidence, ramping up inflation fears, and helping Republicans build their case against U.S. President Joe Biden and his ambitious plans to revamp the U.S. economy with trillions of dollars in new spending. As the 1970s show, high jobless figures and rising prices the United States saw in April can be a potent political force. Republicans crafted a misery index out of the two factors to attract then-President Jimmy Carter. After hitting 75% approval ratings early in his presidency, the Democrat, Jimmy Carter, was trounced in a 1980 landslide. The White House claims there's bound to be surprises as the United States emerges from an unprecedented pandemic. Cecilia Roos, the chair of the White House Council for Economic Advisers, told reporters recently, "We must keep in mind that an economy will not heal instantaneously." Cecilia Roos added, "It takes several weeks for people to get full immunity from vaccinations, and even more time for those left jobless from the pandemic to find and to start a suitable job." Roos, speaking to reporters at the White House, said, "A mismatch between supply and demand due to the pandemic and the economic snapback had pushed inflation higher, but the mismatch should prove temporary." Cecilia Roos added, "I fully expect that will work itself out in the coming months." The U.S. Federal Reserve also is betting heavily that inflation will cool on its own, even as hiring picks up steam over the summer, Americans start to travel again, and the U.S. Federal Reserve keeps its massive crisis levels of support intact. The White House wouldn't offer a timeline for when the economy will smooth out, but it doesn't expect a repeat of April's weak job report, and recent data show applicants for unemployment benefit fell to a 14-month low. A senior White House official claimed on Wednesday, 12th of May, the senior official said, the trend lines continue to be positive, adding that the White House also believes the U.S. Federal Reserve can handle what comes up. He said, we haven't seen anything that has suggested that the U.S. Federal Reserve doesn't have an ample toolkit to manage any of the risks that might present themselves. But still, there is more turmoil in the months to come. Republicans, divided by former President Donald Trump's claims that the 2020 election was stolen from him, have seized the moment to knock the foundation of Joe Biden's economic plans, raising taxes on the wealthy and on wealthy companies. Citing inflation fears and gas prices, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy told reporters outside of the White House, "You won't find any Republicans are willing to raise taxes. I think that's the worst thing you can do in this economy." The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the powerful corporate lobby group, is pushing for repeal of special unemployment payments, that were a cornerstone of Joe Biden's campaign, and over a dozen state governors have decided to roll them back early. With 7.5 million more people either unemployed or out of the job market altogether compared to before the coronavirus pandemic, even a month or two more of weaker than expected job growth and rising prices would up the pressure on Joe Biden and the U.S. Federal Reserve. Gregory Dacko, chief U.S. economist at Oxford Economics, said, if we get one more April, that is concerning. Some early data suggests that May's jobs report could be weak as well. Gregory Dacko said, if workers don't take jobs for whatever reason, continued fear of disease or lack of childcare, and higher than usual unemployment benefits have been cited, it would indicate a significant supply constraint. Then he said, the question is, how do you get people back to work? And that is a different question than pumping stimulus money into the economy. The Biden administration, workers, labor advocates, and some economists have argued that firms should raise their wages if they're having trouble hiring. And some, including McDonald's Corporation, have followed suit. U.S. Federal Reserve officials concede that things could be tricky. Richmond Federal Reserve President Thomas Barkin said, the question of how to unclog the labor market is going to be a critical one, and could limit overall economic growth this year if it takes too long. While unsticking the labor market is one challenge, stamping out price flare-ups as Americans return to schools and offices and go on vacation once again is another. Consumer sentiment in early May tumbled as people worried about rising prices. Inflation expectations for the year ahead and over the next 5 years rose to their highest level in more than a decade. Richmond Federal Reserve President Thomas Barkin said, you have a logistical challenge of shutting down an economy and bringing it back up, and we're not built for that. The Colonial Pipeline shutdown that led to gas lines in some southern states had nothing to do with the pandemic and was lifted on Wednesday, 12th of May. But Joe Biden said on Thursday, 13th of May, it could take some time before it returns to normal. A semiconductor shortage that started before Biden took office continues to drive up car prices as pandemic-shy Americans look for alternatives to public transportation. According to Ken Simonson, the chief economist for the Associated General Contractors of America, home builders point to surging lumber prices they say threaten the critical housing market and the broader economy. Prices for construction materials used in the construction industry jumped a massive 19.7% from April 2020 to last month, the largest increase in the past 35 years. The White House declined to elaborate on specific remedies it might pursue to help the supply side of the economy, but pointed to steps to bring fuel to market after the Colonial Pipeline shutdown. Jimmy Carter and his predecessor, Republican Gerald Ford, found inflation impossible to beat, but faced more endemic problems in the 1970s. A Gerald Ford push to encourage Americans to save more and spend less, whip inflation now or win, was an abject failure. Gas lines then were the result of entrenched geopolitics, not a one-off hack. Inflation was much higher and fed by a countrywide psychology that those prices and wages should just keep going up, an important difference that the U.S. Federal Reserve officials are adamant they will not allow to reoccur. The country actually added an average of 215,000 jobs monthly during the Carter years. Yet unemployment was rising because so many new workers were joining the labor force, thanks to demographic trends and more women working outside the home for the first time. Joe Biden faces a very different problem, a job market in the wake of a deadly pandemic that has left workers constrained, nervous, or living off savings and unemployment benefits for now. But that doesn't mean his job is any easier.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ministry.
It is rain made of fire. This is how the people besieged in Gaza described the dense showers of shells on the sky, the sea, and the earth upon which the flood of devastation fell. Photos of the martyrs and the cries of families from under the rubble of their homes are ceaseless. Children the age of mine hiding behind their parents, their only remaining safe place, chanting a surah from the Holy Quran, hoping from the Lord of Heaven to escape death. As for the hospitals, their corridors turned into hell with the arrival of the martyrs and the wounded in dozens of batches. A paramedic comes out screaming as he just found the bodies of his two younger brothers lying in the fridge. Father at the emergency gate embraces his infant son, the last survivor of his entire family. May our Lord give us patience, Yaba, he says to his wounded little child, collapsing in tears. As for the little boy who joined the procession of his martyr father screaming during the funeral, his voice will continue to haunt this world forever. The number of martyrs is rising insanely inside Gaza with 174 as of Sunday and more than 1,400 wounded. These included 39 children and 22 women since the start of the Israeli aggression last week. Retaliating to Israel's fiery winter and its targeting of children, women, and residential buildings, Israel finds itself surrounded by missiles that have reached deep into the occupied territories in an equation perpetuated by the resistance. Every residential building that is bombed in Gaza will be met by bombing Tel Aviv and the internal occupied territories inhabited by illegal colonial settlers. In the context, the military spokesman for the Al-Qassam Brigades, Abu Ubaidah, confirmed, saying, "We have prepared ourselves to bomb Tel Aviv for 6 continuous months in retaliation to Israel's incremental genocide. The Palestinian people do not expect a lesson from anyone on how to resist the occupation. Today, they are teaching us how they deal with frustration, fatigue, and blockade. And they explain for those who want to understand that when there is a will to confront the aggressor, a lot can be achieved. What we are witnessing in terms of military capabilities in Gaza is nothing but the result of years of hard work with a heavy price paid in sweat, blood, and tears. It paid off, though. And be not faint of heart when you seek out the enemy. If you happen to suffer pain, behold, they are also suffering as you suffer." Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. The Israeli occupation continues to intensify its aggression to pressure the Palestinian resistance in the Gaza Strip through a series of intense air raids unparalleled in the history of Gaza's struggle with the occupation. In the wake of the painful strikes from the resistance, the occupation lost all sanity, carrying out scores of airstrikes on Gaza with F-16 and F-35 war jets, dropping more than 500 heavy missiles at various targets in the strip on residential areas, media towers, and crossroads, leading to scores of martyrs and injured civilians. To discuss this issue with us from Minnesota is Manar Adli, founder of MinPress News, producer and host of Behind the Headline. Thank you very much for being with us, Manar. Now, the fighting ground has intensified between the occupation and the Palestinian resistance inside of the Gaza Strip, as well inside the interior occupied territories. But while the operation is dubbed Al-Quds Sword inside of Gaza, it is passing on steadily with various surprises against their enemy. The latter returns to its masters, genocide, killing civilians, bombing residential areas. This time, not only just residential towers are being wiped out, but entire residential squares, I mean, entire neighborhoods are being flattened down. This is the definition of ethnic cleansing, of genocide. Will resistance retaliation be enough to stop this genocide?
Well, as you described, Mauro, we are witnessing a massacre, an unprecedented massacre and genocide, basically being broadcasted live for the world to witness. And yet Israel continues to face absolutely no consequences. The United States has, Joe Biden, we call him Sleepy Joe Biden, he basically gave just a one-minute response about this massacre that has left over 200 civilians dead, including over 50 children now. That makes up over 40% of the deaths to include children. And so Joe Biden simply came out to say that Israel has a right to defend itself. Defend itself against who? These children? That's who the mainstream corporate media is describing as the militants that Israel has a right to defend itself to. And so because of the gravity of this massacre, because entire families, as you described, are being completely wiped off the map, we're seeing images of just a baby being rescued from the rubble, whereas the mother, the father, the siblings, the uncles, the aunts, the grandmas, the grandfathers are completely, they've died. They've died in these massacres from Israeli bombs being hit. And so the people of Palestine, and especially in Gaza, are, their blood is boiling. And they have a lot of hope to continue to fight Israel and retaliate and respond through their resistance. Under international law, Palestinians have the right to defend themselves.
Wars can be triggered by an isolated incident, but their cause is always deeper than that. In this case, the trigger was the what's being called upon as an eviction, but it's stealing the land and the homes of the Palestinians in favor for Israeli illegal colonial settlers, especially in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in East Al-Quds. This is what started it, including the attack on Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of Islam's holiest sites. Why did this sudden eruption of war outside and inside Israel's occupation borders come as such a shock for apartheid Israel?
Well, I think that, talking about the timeline is really important. We have to break down really how this conflict got started. Obviously, outside of the context that this most recent eruption of violence erupted during the month of Ramadan and Eid, where images of Israeli forces and police were basically pulling Palestinians out of their homes in Sheikh Jarrah, resisting, settlers, Israeli colonial settlers that are coming from New York with Brooklyn accents that want to come and expel these Palestinians from their homes, claiming that they have, a heritage there, 2,000 years there, when in reality these are the Palestinians that have lived in these homes for decades, centuries, and have a historical tie to these homes. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important to understand that this is outside of just what has happened in the last week or two. This is about a broader issue of Israeli occupation and ethnic cleansing and genocide that has been taking place for over 75 years now. And the world over is witnessing this ethnic cleansing take place on live TV, and the Palestinian youth are banding together and are basically leading this revolution.
What really pushes my buttons is that the plight of the Palestinian people is always dealt with in a discrimination fashion, discriminatory, contempt from the Western regime, from the Western governments in specific, even at the humanitarian level. Why do you think that is happening?
Well, Israel has such a stronghold when it comes to, you know, the world political scene. They have historically been threatening the UN. They have been threatening the ICC that has been trying to hold Israel accountable for war crimes. The Israel lobby is extremely, extremely powerful in the United States, you know, funding U.S. politicians to silence them and to get silence them about the Palestinian cause and to get them to attack and smear Palestinian voices. You know, I was just watching a video last night of a former Israeli minister. I don't remember what her name was, but she was discussing how, you know, anytime Palestinians speak up and revolt, all Israel has to do is use the words anti-Semitism.
Wow.
And use, and she was admitting to this. She said that all we have to do is use the words, the accusation, the label anti-Semitism, and it silences the world over and brings people back to support Israel. Anti-Semitism has been weaponized to silence the Palestinian people, but unfortunately what anti-Semitism, the accusation of anti-Semitism has done is actually increased anti-Semitism against Jews the world over. But that's not the point. The point is that the Israel lobby and the power of the Israel war machine is so powerful that it has now brought in also not just, you know, the EU and other Western countries, but it is now brought in through the help of course, Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner,
mm-hmm.
Peace deals and arms deals between Israel and Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Morocco, and Sudan. And so Israel is power and influence is now the world over. And so that's why we're seeing even these very lame condemnations coming out of Saudi Arabia and Egypt saying, you know, we condemn Israel. But in reality, they are completely complicit in the crimes that Israel is committing against Palestinians because they are working hand in hand with Israel, not only in Gaza and Palestine to silence and massacre the Palestinian people, but to silence, to starve and massacre the people in Yemen. And so when Joe Biden comes out and says that we're working with our allies in the region, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Egypt, to work with Israel, you know, to find a solution, all Joe Biden is saying is that we as the mass murderers, the U.S. empire, the largest empire the world has ever seen that spreads terror across the world and bloodshed, we are turning to other mass murderers like Saudi Arabia, who's committing a major genocide in Israel, in Yemen, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
For advice on how to solve this issue. So as long as U.S. imperialism and its proxies reign freely, there will be no justice in
Palestine. Well, it remains to be seen how the internal resistance and the Gaza resistance will work together further in harmony to try and protect Palestine and lead the way for the freedom of Palestine. Well, thank you very much, Manar Adli, founder of Min Press News and producer and host of Behind the Headline, for being with us to discuss this plight against the entire nation of Palestine. Thank you for being with us. Please stay tuned. Next, we will talk about how the resistance was able to show the failure of the Israeli intelligence.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
One of the most important features of the confrontation waged by the resistance factions in the Gaza Strip against the Israeli attacks is that it has been characterized by a series of surprises that establish new equations that will have a profound impact on the perception of the Israeli regime's political and security institutions towards Gaza when it comes to future rules of engagement. Now, the series of surprises began with the involvement of the resistance inside Gaza directly with the Al-Quds line of events, when they issued a warning to the occupation authorities to backtrack on their Judaization attempts and repressive measures against Jerusalemites, or else things will get ugly for the occupation, and indeed they did. More details in this following report.
The starting point in the response to the Zionist Israeli aggression is that the heroics recorded by the Palestinian resistance dropped the false assessments that were repeated by the Israeli intelligence apparatus, claiming the Palestinians are far from initiating an effective and painful response in the internal Israeli settlements. The series of surprises began with the entry of Hamas and the rest of the resistance factions directly on the Al-Quds line, when they issued a warning to the occupation authorities to backtrack on their Judaization and repressive measures against Jerusalemites. The events that followed were foundational and unprecedented, as they established a new equation of deterrence inside the Palestinian territories, which Tel Aviv fears its consequences and repercussions on the entire Palestinian scene. In this position, the resistance all across Palestine was able to reconnect what was broken by the flimsy Oslo Agreement. Nevertheless, the Israeli military and intelligence minds were not ready to realize that a second shocking surprise awaited them. They did not ask the settlers gathered in Jerusalem to leave, despite the warning of the Qassam brigades. Rather, it seems that they were presuming that the limit was to launch a few rockets at the settlements surrounding the Gaza enclave. However, the first retaliatory attack from Gaza reached occupied Jerusalem, leading to utmost panic among the settlers, who were seen fleeing in every direction. The next surprise was presented by the large and synchronous missile salvos that were able to bypass Israel's missile interception system, as well as the accuracy of the hit from the first thrash, which reflected the improvement in aiming and guidance due to the technological development that the resistance had developed. The volume of the simultaneous missile strikes reveals the fact that the size of the missile stockpile is much greater than the Israeli estimations, and the tactics adopted by the resistance showed a serious Israeli intelligence failure, as this constitutes the basis of any recommendation of military operational options, as well as failure in assessing the hostile capabilities of Israel on its southern front line with Gaza. Thus, instead of the continued Israeli attacks improving the occupation forces' image and restoring prestige, the missile retaliation deepened the leadership crisis in Tel Aviv and constituted a challenge that it could not overcome, leading it to target high residential and media towers in the Gaza Strip, hoping to deter any resistance through genocidal tactics. Here came the next resounding surprise by targeting occupied Tel Aviv and its environs through Qassam brigades and Al-Quds brigades, with dozens of missiles that were also able to bypass Israel's missile interception system and achieve accurate hits. This led to a completely new scene for Israel, where it realized that it was up to its neck in a quagmire that had not even crossed the minds of its incompetent leaders. Now with us from Beirut is Sharmi Narwani, independent journalist and political commentator, to talk about to us about how the Gaza resistance was able to show the world that Israel is just not that tough. Sharmin, the series of surprises began with the entry of Hamas and the rest of the resistance factions in the Gaza Strip directly on the Al-Quds events, the events of Sheikh Jarrah and Al-Aqsa Mosque. This was a first surprise that the Israelis could not really understand and fathom, as it was unprecedented. Now, was the resistance in Gaza able to establish a new equation of deterrence that will have repercussions on the entire Palestinian scene, even outside of the Gaza Strip?
To be honest, my opinion is no, not yet. There are two components of deterrence, the way I look at it, for in this particular situation. One is the military deterrence, and that has not been established yet. We can talk about that a bit later. Mm-hmm. But what is, I think, really critical to note, and I think many people have noted, is this insurrection has been very different than in the past when Gaza has gone at it alone. So from Jerusalem to the West Bank to, very unusually, the Palestinians inside Israel who are Israeli citizens, and then Gaza have all combined their forces. And this is important because Israel has assiduously spent decades trying to separate these Palestinian units. And in one in one shot after the events at Al-Aqsa Mosque, they all combined. So in terms of future militaristic adventures for Israel, I think they will be very hesitant. So I think in that sense, there has been a new deterrence mark set, not militarily yet, but certainly in terms of breaking all of the taboos Israel had helped work to establish very hard about Palestinians uniting on one front.
Well, the next surprise was presented by the large and synchronous missile salvos that were able to bypass Israel's Iron Dome, showcasing the technological advancement that the resistance has developed. And Israel has shown that its top-notch anti-missile system, its defense system, has failed. So if that is the case, if so, how about if they go on in a ground invasion towards Gaza? What will happen then?
Well, firstly, like I said earlier, I do not think Palestinians have established military deterrence yet. Mm-hmm. And it's because, so the Israelis claimed yesterday, I think by yesterday, in a UN report that there were 2,900 missiles fired from Gaza into Israel. According to the United Nations, 450 bypassed the Iron Dome. And some of those fell in Gaza. But a lot of them reached commercial targets, residential targets, and very essentially, as the Israelis believe, that Palestinians in Gaza are now trying to target Israel's energy sector. They closed the Tamar gas field because there were drones, Palestinian drones and rockets fired towards it, and Palestinians also fired rockets towards a crude oil pipeline in Israel. So the main, I think the essential thing here is for us, don't forget Palestinians have promised more surprises, much like Hezbollah did in 2006. So we haven't quite seen those yet. We have seen some targeted missiles, but they need to have very accurate, pinpointed, targeted missiles for this to become a major deterrence to the state of Israel.
Well,
and anti-aircraft missiles, for that matters. I mean, if we see one of those, it's game over for the Israeli Air Force to a certain extent. As for your question about will we see a land attack by Israel, I do not think that makes any sense for the Israelis. They will clock a lot more soldier deaths and possibly kidnappings, which is a worst-case scenario for Israel. They don't go into Gaza, as we've seen in the past, in a light way. They go in heavy with these soldiers burdened down with equipment. They go with armored vehicles and aircraft above. So it will be a very, very hard play for Israel. I don't see them doing a land invasion anytime soon.
Well, the tactics adopted by the resistance showed a serious Israeli intelligence failure, as the intel usually constitutes the basis of any recommendation for a military maneuver or a military operational option. How on earth did Israel fail to the extent that in assessing the anti-Israeli capabilities in its southern front alone, which I'm not saying that it's not enough, but compared to other fronts, it should have assessed it in a better way?
We've seen that Israel isn't very good at this, you know. Contrary to sort of popular impressions, we saw this in 2006, and the Israelis had the Winograd Commission, which they saw very clearly outlined that the state had failed miserably in its intelligence activities leading up to this confrontation. And so why would this be any different? I think the Israelis are very soft in some ways now. They've sort of cruised in cruise control for years, banking on endless American billions and state-of-the-art American military equipment, believing in some way that a qualitative military edge had ensured that Arab states around it would not attack Israel. But this is different. This is from within. So I don't see, Israel continues to have blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were Israel, I would be looking at what the Houthis, Ansar Allah, were able to do with pinpoint targeting of missiles at Aramco to understand what Gaza potentially has up its sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apartheid, Israel already knows that this confrontation will have its toll on its regional image in particular, especially with those that they have openly became friends with, especially when their limited capabilities against Gaza were exposed, as you mentioned earlier. Massive questions now are being raised concerning the possible encounter against Hezbollah on the northern front, which enjoys vastly different weaponry and objective advantages. We have seen that in Syria over the past 11 years. After what we have seen in Gaza and the occupied Palestinian territories as well, how do you assess the Israeli position in the event of a confrontation, at least, not to say a war, with Hezbollah on the